Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Dude, why are there so many Janets? And why do I sound like Janet?
You also look like Janet.
Do I? Why? What? What is happening? Oh no. Am I wearing a vest? Who? Michael, help me!
This is gonna be tricky. How do we even tell them apart?
Oh!
Okay, that one's Jason.
I have lived and worked with these people now for 3 years, so I do know them really well now. So now it's just sort of creepily staring at them when they're not watching me to see what else I can pick up on.
Welcome to That Scene with me, Dan Patrick, an Amazon original podcast where I get to talk to Hollywood's top actors and directors about some of the most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by actress and comedian Darcy Carden. She was born and raised in Danville, California in 1980. Upon graduating from college in 1998, Darcy moved to New York City and eventually joined the Upright Citizens Brigade improv group in 2004. It was during this time she worked for Saturday Night Live cast member Bill Hader as his nanny. In the 2000s, Darcy began earning consistent guest roles on shows like Broad City, Inside Amy Schumer, and Veep. Finally, in 2016, she was cast as Janet, the living virtual assistant in the NBC comedy series The Good Place. The Good Place stars Kristen Bell and Ted Danson and was created by the legendary comedy writer and producer Michael Schur. The show ran for 4 seasons, earning Darcy an Emmy nomination in 2020. She went back to work for Bill Hader, this time as a supporting cast member on his HBO dark comedy series, Barry. Darcy will be starring in the upcoming series reboot of the film A League of Their Own. The scene in question today comes during Season 3, Episode 9 of The Good Place, when Darcy must perform all of the lead characters of the show by herself at the same time. Does Good Place find you, or do you find it?
How do I even answer that? I mean, when I got The Good Place, I was like a struggling actor. I was nannying. I was taking little writing jobs for little comedy shows here and there. That's an interesting low point in my life because it was like I was starting to come to terms with what my life and career was looking like. And the panic was fading and it was sort of more, you know, coming to terms with it, more accepting it, more, okay, this thing isn't going to happen, but I'm actually okay. I'm doing okay. I like my life. I like my friends. I like my husband. I like my family. I like the fact that I get to perform at the UCB multiple nights a week. I'm not going to make a living at the, you know, there. You started just sort of letting things go and becoming okay with that. And that is when Good Place came into my life. That was just another, just a regular old audition, a little more exciting because it was Mike Schur and I was a huge Mike Schur fan. And then a little more exciting because I was, you know, I knew Kristen Bell and Ted Danson were attached, but I also knew there was no way in hell I was going to get the job. I mean, no way in hell, you know? It was just an audition to try to do good, but it wasn't an audition to get a job. It was just like, let's see if I can, you know, impress Mike Schur. Let's see if I can make the people in the audition laugh.
I'm Janet. I'm the informational assistant here in The Good Place.
She's like this walking database. You can ask her about the creation of the universe or history.
Oh, there was a guy who lived in Avondale, Arizona around 2002. His name was Kevin Peltonic. Is he gay?
No.
Really?
I guess he just didn't want to have sex with me.
That's correct.
Well, that's fine. I wasn't that into him anyway.
Yes, you were.
And a lot of times actors will talk about, I don't give a damn. I don't care. Like David Harbour talks about Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And he said, I went in there and I had an Indiana Jones hat on and they said, lose the hat. And he goes, no, he wears this hat.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. He goes, I didn't give a shit. I'm like, no, I'm going to go in. I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think when you don't try as hard, isn't that weird?
It is weird. It's like this weird, confusing dance. When you go into an audition or a room and you're desperate for it, it's so unappealing, you know? But we are desperate for it. Actors are desperate for it because we don't, you know, unless we're creating it ourselves, we don't have the thing. They're going to give us the thing. We're like, please give us the damn thing. And that is so unattractive and unappealing. And when you go in, like you're saying, with the Indiana Jones hat, or you go in a little bit like, this isn't going to happen anyway, so let me just give you what I got or whatever. It's kind of, I think the people behind the desk go like, huh, I'm intrigued.
But this is like love, though, too.
Yeah.
When you're not looking for it, you find it, as opposed to you're desperate for it and you look desperate or you sound desperate.
Totally.
And we stay away from desperate.
Yes, it is. I mean, maybe that's like the best advice for a struggling actor is like, if you're good at dating, you can be good at auditioning.
Take rejection.
Yes. Take rejection. Know yourself. Be cool. It is so much about just bringing who you are and not trying to be what they want, you know? And maybe that's also for relationships. It is. It totally is. Don't try to be what the person wants. You got to show them who you really are. Otherwise, what are we doing here? And things started to click in my career and my life when I stopped. Again, it wasn't that I didn't care, because I do know there are actors that go through that where they're like, oh, I don't, you know, the Indiana Jones hat is the perfect example. It's not that I didn't care. It was just that I so very much knew I wasn't going to get this role, but I also thought I might be good at it. So I'm just going to show them how good I could have been at it. And then maybe they'll cast me in a little role in some little episode in season 3. They won't forget that I made them laugh that one day or something. So it was like, it was a little bit like the confidence of knowing that it was not going to happen. I don't know. It's a weird paradox.
What's that phone call like when you realize you're getting cast in The Good Place?
It felt like it had been months of auditions. In reality, it probably was a couple weeks. Because again, you know, I'm auditioning for things all the time. My rule is you go audition for it, you walk out the door, and you never think about it again because it's too painful, you know?
And how many rounds of auditions are we talking about?
I think it was about 4.
Okay.
I got some good news like right away. It was like after the first audition. And so then it started being like, oh no. Okay. Now I'm really thinking about it. And now it goes from, you know, 0 to 100 where you're like, where you start thinking about, okay, this could be mine. I kept picturing, I almost don't even want to say it because I know this isn't real, but I kept thinking it's going to be Scarlett Johansson. And I don't really mean Scarlett Johansson, but I meant it's going to be some really famous actress. It's not going to be me. It's going to be some household name. Of course, it's not going to be Scarlett Johansson, but you know what I mean. It's going to be Meryl Streep. It's going to be Reese Witherspoon. When I hear who got cast in this role, I'm going to go, oh, of course, it was always them, you idiot. So I still knew it wasn't going to be me, but you just get a little closer. And okay, so they liked that. Oh, so they laughed at that. Okay. And you sort of start letting yourself feel it a little bit more. You know, the last thing was this thing called a test. And then it feels really real because you're like signing a contract, but you're still auditioning with other people, but it starts to feel really real. Like this is a second away from possibly being mine. Or if it's not mine, it's yours or yours. I'm in a room with the other girls who are auditioning. So no. It feels, so it feels really real. I left the room every time being like, I don't think it could have gone better. Again, it's going to be Scarlett Johansson, but I don't think it could have gone better. I was so obsessed with getting the call. When's the call coming? It had been a couple days. I was like pulling my hair out. My husband was trying to sort of distract me. So we were watching TV and we were going to see movies and we were hanging out with friends. He was just like really trying to take care of me and distract me. And we were binging, I think it was season 2 of Fargo, which Ted Danson is on, which we didn't realize. And that was making it even harder. I want to work with this guy so bad. We're watching Fargo. And then I got a call from my agent and she said, are you sitting down?
Oh,
I know.
That can mean a couple of things.
That could be either, right? Right. But I could hear it. You know, we celebrated at the time we were living in a duplex with two of our best friends who, not to name drop, but are the creators of Hacks. They're doing really well right now. So we went up to their door and knocked on it and we had champagne. And it was a really great, really special time. And then continued to just be like such a wonderful experience. Oh, my God.
Okay, Janet, I have a question.
Okay.
What is The Bad Place like?
Oh, sorry. That is the one topic I'm not allowed to tell you about. I can only play you a brief audio clip of what is happening there right now.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't sound awesome.
Well, take me to season 3, episode 9, where you're the star. You're playing everybody. When you first get this, what are you thinking?
I remember reading the script like this. Hand was over my face. I was reading the lines in between my two fingers because I was excited and overwhelmed and scared. And I knew that it was such a responsibility. And I knew that Mike Schur and the writers were giving me a gift of a lifetime and trusting me with something that I was thrilled about and terrified about, you know? I couldn't quite picture how the hell this was going to work. I knew it was going to be a lot of work on my part.
So where are we exactly? We're not on Earth, right?
That's correct, Chidi Janet. You're not.
Your real bodies dematerialized when you entered my void, and your essences reconstituted themselves in this form.
Cool. And when you say void...
Oh, I mean a subdimension outside of space and time, at the nexus of consciousness and matter, tethered to my essence. Does that help?
It does not help. Makes it way worse. I just want to lie down.
Where is down?
I found it. It's up here. It's dope.
But how do you prepare? And how long did it take to shoot that where you have to get everybody's mannerisms down? You're playing everybody.
I'm not an impressionist. That's not something that's in my back pocket. But I have lived and worked with these people now for 3 years. So I do know them really well now. So now it's just sort of creepily staring at them when they're not watching me to see what else I can pick up on. What, you know, little thing do they do with their hands or what little inflection, or just sort truly creepily watching, like pretending to be writing in my script, but just like eyes up looking at Will or whatever. I would watch old episodes. So I asked the editor to edit together like almost highlight reels of each character, you know, so I can see them when they're mad, when they're sad, when they're happy, when they're laughing, and just studied it, watched it over and over and over, over and over like a maniac.
This is nuts. We're in a void in the body of a white lady.
Not a lady.
Not a lady, darling.
But we are white. Let's all say white people things. Billy Joel. I found it on Etsy. There was nowhere to park. Did you refill the Brita?
I find this void quite calming, actually. It's like, this time the Xanax took me.
Who was the toughest to get?
You know, Kristen was really hard to get. You know, she's the straight man in the show, and she's not a crazy character. She's sort of the straight and narrow one, and it's subtle. What she's doing is so subtle. I think in general, what Kristen Bell does as an actor, as a comedic actor, is so subtle and incredible. I think she's insanely talented and makes it look really easy. She was hard.
Can you morph into her right now?
No.
Why? You're an actor. Meryl Streep could have done
it. Well, Meryl Streep should have gotten the damn part then.
Scarlett Johansson. Wait, you can't morph into her mannerism.
You know, it's funny. It's like, I don't know if I've touched any of them since.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That whole experience, it was so wild and special and sort of crazy making that I really did leave it there. It was like, I've only watched the episode once.
But you have to step out of your body almost to do this, but then you have to be in your body to play you.
Right.
But you're acting as like, oh my God.
I know. It's wild. It didn't just make me crazy. It made Morgan Sackett, the director. It made Josh and Dylan, the writers, crazy. We were all so, it was so technical. It was nothing we had ever done before. It was acting with no one. You know, we shot this episode for about 8 or 9 days. It doesn't make sense. It made me into a lunatic. My husband would be like, you're okay, Darcy. You're okay. You're going to get through this. But it was also so fun. It was insane. You know, the first day of shooting, mostly I was by myself, of course, because I'm acting with myself. So which means I'm actually acting with like a tennis ball or a piece of tape on the wall or whatever.
This is a classic philosophical question, the concept of the self or who we are, philosophically speaking. There's the Chidi I am, who lived a certain life, and there's the Chidi you saw, your soulmate or whatever, who had some entirely different life. Not the same Chidis.
I'm so sorry, yeah.
No, I get it. Counterpoint, that's the dumbest thing you've ever said, and you do not deserve a puppy. I'm unpooping your puppy! Things are getting cuter and I want them to get less cute.
But the first day Ted Danson was there because he's in the very first scene. And it's a scene where Ted and Janet are looking at four Janets. And so four of me. And, you know, again, Ted and I are in reality are looking at four pieces of colored tape on poles. And and doing a scene with no one. And afterwards he sat me down and he was like, Darce, this is going to be really hard. He was like, this is going to be pretty terrible. Just know that going into it, you're going to lose your mind. And the best advice he gave me was to remember what I was doing and to remember that I was acting and remember what the whole objective of the episode and what each scene is. And that it's not just about getting Manny's voice right or getting Jamila's accent right. It's about, you know, this is a really important episode to the story of this whole entire series. And it all rides on my shoulders. But he was more just saying, you know, you have to, it's almost like an acting exercise. Like you're going to have to go a little bit above and beyond the normal thing and remember what all this was. And it really, to get that on the first day was really helpful.
Who told you you nailed it?
My husband watched it and he did cry afterwards.
He cried?
When we were done watching it, he turned to me and there was a tear rolling down his face, you know, and he was like, I'm really proud of you. And that really meant the damn world to me. We've been together for 15 years. He's seen me through the ups and downs. He's seen me do a great show. He's seen me do the shittiest show of my life. And he's seen me kill on stage and he's seen me die on stage. And so I can't quite get one past him when it comes to acting, you know?
Here's my best approximation of human crying.
Oh, Janet, that was beautiful.
And so for him to really be proud of me and tell me that I did it, it meant a lot. And then little bits along the way, I was trying so hard to make those writers proud and to do what they were hoping I would do. And it's like the biggest, warmest hug from your dead grandpa or whatever coming down and saying, like,
whoa,
I'm proud of, meaning like whoever could make you, whoever could come back and say, like, you did it. I'm proud of you. Anytime the writers or Mike Schur said that they were proud of me or that I did a good job, it really meant the world.
I guess the profession is to please others. Like you're waiting for somebody to say, hey, nice job, or nailed it.
Isn't that pathetic?
Yes, it is. It is. It is sad.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the profession in every way. It's like in micro, right? You're doing a scene and the director says, good job, we can move on. Or macro, where an audience or a review, every step of the way, I shouldn't speak for all actors, but I don't know if I did it right. I mean, sometimes you feel like, okay, that clicked or like that felt good, but you know, you just don't know. You're really waiting for someone to say good job. It's fucking pathetic. It really is. It really is. And you know, you try to, you kind of learn little, like who you can trust even. Because some sweet, wonderful directors or writers will just say good job no matter what. But you want to stick with the ones that really tell you when it was good and tell you when it wasn't quite there. Coming from the stage, so doing improv and doing sketch comedy on stage for a decade where you know if you nailed it immediately, you know if you didn't nail it immediately. The audience will tell you truly within seconds if you succeeded or failed. And so then to move to TV where if they laugh, they ruin a take. So no one's laughing. No one's saying good job. No one's smiling. No one's doing anything but staying in character or you know, moving the camera or holding the boom mic. Years into it now, and I'm still leaving set, I get into my car and I'm like, well, I didn't say one goddamn funny thing today. And then, of course, yes, you watch it back and it works. But there is something about the not getting an immediate audience reaction that I can't quite get used to.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great tasting dairy,
you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
New York has a way of humbling you.
Don't it?
Right?
Yeah.
But how did that impact you as an actor?
In the summers before moving to New York, when I was in college, I was doing this sort of like theater company, summer stock type of shows with Broadway actors. Broadway actors would come to California and we would do these shows. So I had my sort of like New York group of friends were all on Broadway. So I was a little bit like, I'm going to be on Broadway when I get to New York. Like, this is happening. Like, we're all in the same boat here. They're going to welcome me with open arms. And of course, you know, you get there and your first audition, the line is halfway around the block or all the way around the block. And you just realize, like, everybody was the lead of their high school play. You know what I mean? Everybody was the star of their community theater. And it's like, you think you know that going into it, but you really don't until you get there. So it humbled me, like, instantly, where I really realized, where you got to find your spot, you know? We're not all going to be the lead of the next Broadway show. You have to find what you're good at.
But at what point, what's your lowest point? And do you wonder if you can do this for a living?
There were so many. Which to choose? You know, the first few years of living in New York, it wasn't even like, the low points weren't even not getting the part. It's like not even getting the audition. You're not a contender. It's not between you and the other girl. It's like you didn't even get the call to show up to try to get the part. So, and then you wonder, how the hell am I ever going to get that? And so the first few years, I think I was just sort of wandering around New York City, like looking to the sky, like, what are we doing here? The home that I found was the Upright Citizens Brigade, a great comedy theater in New York and in LA. And I went and saw a show and it was like a real aha moment. I went and saw a show and I'd never seen a long form improv show before. And it was mind blowing. And it was like, this is what I need to do. Then there's a whole new low point. Cause then it's, oh, I want to get on that team, or I want to be in this show, or I want to work with that person. And it starts to be smaller and more direct. And so then those failures, when those things didn't happen, they felt bigger. They felt sadder. They felt more all encompassing.
But does it ever go away? That fear of failure?
No, it doesn't. I was about to say it gets easier, but what I really mean is, and I don't think this is good grammar, but it gets different. I mean, I really don't know if it ever goes away. When The Good Place wrapped a few years ago, there was a couple months before I knew the next show I was doing. And in those couple months, you kind of know something's coming. You don't know what it's going to be. You don't know who it's going to be with. You don't know if it's going to be cool or if you're going to like it. Then it's a different kind of failure. It's like, okay, well, now I think I'm probably going to get to be on another TV show, but I don't know if it's going to be dog shit, you know? I don't know what it's going to be.
How do you fight the urge to not ask Bill Hader a ton of questions when you're a nanny for him?
It's hard. And it's also, you know, it's not exactly in my personality, much to my dad's dismay, to ask the Bill Haders of the world for, you know, a foot in the door or even advice, you know?
But do you try to be funny in front of Bill? Like, did you audition for Bill, but he didn't know you were auditioning?
It's, you know, no, I didn't. I really tried to keep it separate. And again, I don't even think this is like, I mean, obviously it has like worked out in my favor in that particular case, but I don't even know that this was the right move. But I tried so hard to keep comedy and acting separate from being Bill's nanny. You know, it was like, I'm Bill's nanny. I take care of his child. I'm really good at my job. And I'm not going to ask him how it was playing Stefan last weekend or whatever, or what it was like, you know, acting with Jim Carrey or whatever. I think I knew that it would sour the relationship in some way. It's like, I didn't want to go there. I knew something would change. It was bigger than get my foot in the door. It was like, I really love your family and your children. I'm not going to tell the story because it's Bill's story to tell, but he does tell a story about the first time he saw me do anything at UCB, and he was kind of like, what the hell? Why didn't you tell me about this?
He goes and sees you, but Do you know he's going to go and see you?
We do this one particular show at UCB where we invite, like, usually some sort of celebrity guest or some exciting person to do monologues. So they tell some story off the top of their mind, and we do an improv show based off of that. So he's sitting on stage with us. So when I heard that he was, I think Amy Poehler had asked him to do the show or something. So when I heard he was going to do it, I was like, okay, well, this is going to be a little awkward or a little strange, or maybe it'll be great. Or, you know, I just was two worlds colliding a little bit. You know, I think that was a funny moment for him because he definitely was like, who are you?
Even though you had been his nanny.
Yes, for years. And just, you know, I'm not cracking jokes with him. I mean, we definitely have a similar sense of humor and have always gotten along really well and can make each other laugh. But I wasn't singing and dancing. I think there was some moments early on when we would reference the same movies or comedians or, you know, I think we realized early on that we had very similar tastes. But, you know, the fact that I wasn't asking for a Lorne Michaels introduction, we both kept him separate until we did that show together, that UCB show. And then I think things changed for him where he was sort of like, I want to help this gal out.
Barry's here. Hey.
Okay.
Okay. Wow, look at your outfit. Oh,
yeah. I went to J. Crew and this was on the mannequin.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you see Zach Burrows is here? Do you see him? Don't look at him. Okay. Or like look at him, but don't look at him.
I'm sort of marinating in my craft.
Yeah.
Taking a little time for that.
Yeah.
How do you guys know each other again?
He's just like an old friend. We were like in this secret group together. It was like a special anonymous group for people with problems.
By the way, I know you're a Harry Styles fan.
How do you know that?
I know that.
Okay, fine. Yes, I am.
Because I met Harry Styles in Miami. He was coming out of a bathroom. And I said, Harry, you have no idea who I am, but I got to get a picture because I have three daughters. And he could not have been nicer.
Mm-hmm.
He was cute. He was playful with the camera. He even asked if I got a good picture. I said, not of me. It's a good picture of you. And I sent it out on the family text. My middle daughter calls me within 7 seconds. Where is he? Not, hey, Dad, where is he? I go, he walked away. Go, find him. You got to go find him. I said, hon, he's gone. Dad, you got to find him.
And what did she want?
I don't know.
Just find him.
She had her birthday. We got her tickets to Harry Styles at Madison Square Garden on Halloween night.
Harry Ween.
Yes.
Did she have the time of her life? Yeah.
Yes. And she keeps keeping an eye on Harry and what's going on in his personal life.
It's hard not to.
As if, you know, she may slip in if, you know.
If something happens.
Something happens.
Well, you never know, but that all checks out. He's just the sweetest, nicest, most wonderful, charming. I mean, he really is.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, we've met a bunch and he's wonderful.
Oh.
Sorry to drop that in there. Don't tell your daughter.
No, I'm not going to. I know. Oh, I sing Watermelon Sugar all the time. You know, occasionally I'll remind her that I met Harry Styles and she didn't.
Yes, that you actually are above when it comes to meeting Harry Styles. Yeah, she'll meet him someday.
First thing she said, is he tall? I go, well, no.
Not really.
I mean, I'm 6'3", and I kind of tower over him a little bit. She goes, well, is he like 5'10"? And I go, I don't know. I didn't go, Harry, what's your height and weight here? You know, he was coming out of the bathroom. I was like, hey. And so I said, I think he's around 5'10".
I think so. That sounds about right. I think he's eye to eye with me, and I'm about 5'10".
And she said, well, that's the cutoff. If he's under 5'10", Dad. And I go,
all right. How tall is she?
She's 5'9".
Well, tell her to expand her horizons. You know what I mean?
I know.
Come on.
I know it's tough. I know.
But I'm glad your daughter and maybe all three of your daughters are fans. He's wonderful. I've been a fan of him for like 10 years and he just continues to impress me. And I'm going to be a fan of him for the rest of my damn life.
Even Niall. I met Niall. And I met him at the Olympics in London.
Oh, like years ago?
Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, right. They were so new. They were so new and green. They were so...
He's 18. He's hammered.
Yeah.
He didn't know who I was, but somebody told him I'm the sports guy. So he kept saying, you know, I hear you're the sports guy. And he kept spilling his beer. And And he said, you know where we're going? And I go, no. He goes, we're going to a guy you're going to hear a lot about, Ed Sheeran. He's going to be a big fucking deal. And I go, all right.
Sure, buddy.
They were going to his flat. And next thing you know, Ed Sheeran became a really big
household
fucking deal.
Name. That's so funny. That's so great. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That's great.
Good man. And I've gone to see One Direction, just to let you know.
No, I have to. Maybe we were at the same one. Who knows?
No, we weren't.
You don't know that?
We weren't.
Why do you say we weren't?
Because it was at a casino in Connecticut.
If you think I haven't traveled to see One Direction, you're out of your fucking mind.
Do you cry? Did you cry at the concert?
Let's see. At the One Direction concert?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever cried at a One Direction concert. I did cry recently. I've seen, since the pandemic, I saw a couple concerts, and then I saw a Harry Styles concert in Pittsburgh. And at each of those concerts, a Phoebe Bridger, a Waxahachie, a Rolling Stones, I found myself crying at just being in a space where music was being played around other people. I was like so overwhelmed. Now I have this new emotional level at concerts where I'm sort of moved by the world, you know, like we're all together, coming together, listening to music in one place. And I get overwhelmed. I mean, I cried my eyes out through the entire Rolling Stones concert. I was moved.
Do you know who can cry on cue?
Who?
Scarlett Johansson.
God damn it.
Yeah.
To bring her up again in front of me.
It all comes back to Scarlett Johansson. Always.
And it really does. It honestly does.
I know. Yeah. I tried to get her, and then that's why I had to settle for talking to you. Just like, you know. It's like Streep, then Scarlett.
Yes.
And then
you know what? Truly, if I could be so lucky, if it really was Streep, then Scarlett, then me, I would be fucking made.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to people who they work. They don't take it for granted. And it doesn't sound like you ever will.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, that's a wrap on the season. And thank you for listening. Whether I was talking dad bods with David Harbour, planning my drag ball debut with MJ Rodriguez, or getting cast in How High 2 with Method Man, it's been a lot of fun. And thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening. Want to make sure you check out all the other episodes you might have missed. Take care. New episodes of That Scene are available exclusively on Amazon Music. And all of Season 1 is available wherever you get your podcasts. So make sure you follow us in the Amazon Music app. That Scene with Dan Patrick, created, hosted, produced by me. Our showrunner and producer is Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody. The show is executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood. Our associate producers, Bill Ryan and Marvin Prince. That Scene is an Amazon original and a production of Dan Patrick Productions.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.